Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first LQ update I have is that the 2007 LinuxQuestions.org Members Choice Awards winners have been announced. That's right, the polls are closed and the results are in. You can view the detailed results by going to www.linuxquestions.org/awards, but I've also included a list of winners right on the LQ homepage. Now, this was the 7th annual LQMCAs, and we've set a record for participation each and every year, and this year was no different. We did have some extremely close races this year. In fact, about 0.5% separated first and second in one case. In addition to that, we also had a couple of multi-year winners unseated this year. I think the biggest surprise for me was probably how well VirtualBox did in comparison to Zen and OpenVZ, but that may just be a result of how much marketing is behind some of those other virtualization players. And as you would expect, VMware also did quite well in that poll. Recent Sun acquisitions, MySQL and VirtualBox, both did very well, and MySQL winning the database of the year. So Sun fared pretty well in general. Congratulations to all nominees, and all winners have already been sent a certificate and a website badge. So if you are involved in a project and don't think you got that, please do let me know. There were 27 polls this year, so I'm not going to go through them all, but a couple of the winners were Ubuntu at Desktop Distribution of the Year, Debian at Server Distribution of the Year, MySQL, like I said, was the Database of the Year, Firefox was the Browser of the Year, KDE once again won Desktop Environment of the Year. We actually had a new winner in Compiz and Window Manager of the Year, but I encourage you to go to the LQ site and take a look at all the winners. Next, LQ is proud to sponsor a bunch of upcoming open source events. The first one I'm going to mention today is the MySQL Conference and Expo, and here's the little marketing blurb from them. Big ideas, know-how, and connections. Harness the power of MySQL at the MySQL Conference and Expo. Fast-paced sessions, guru programming advice, in-depth tutorials, late-night hacking. The MySQL Conference and Expo packs a wealth of big ideas, know-how, and connections into 4 concentrated days and nights. Learn how to create the best database applications, tools, and software through expert instructions and hands-on learning at the MySQL Conference and Expo, April 14th through 17th, Santa Clara, California. Now, I'm happy to be able to offer a 15% off all the registration fees as part of LQ being a sponsor. And if you are interested, go to the site and use MYS08LINQ as the code, and you'll get 15% off. The next event that we're sponsoring is Lug Radio Live US, and that's just before the MySQL Conference and Expo. That's in San Francisco, April 12th and 13th. Now, for those of you not familiar with Lug Radio Live, the Lug Radio Live US 2008 brings San Francisco the unique atmosphere of Lug Radio Live UK, an event that has developed a strong reputation for providing a range of topics about free software, open source, digital rights, technology, and more, a compelling list of speakers, exhibitors, and birds of a feather sessions, and wrapping it all in a unique, fun, loose, social, and inclusive event, which is often described as combining the atmosphere of a rock concert and a computer conference. Now, I've heard great things about Lug Radio Live UK. I've unfortunately never been able to attend. It's great to see the show coming to the U.S., and this is another one of those community shows that is definitely taking off. I'm happy to say that I will be attending Lug Radio Live US and actually the MySQL Conference and Expo as well. One really interesting thing about Lug Radio Live is that tickets for the entire weekend are only $10, so the show is definitely well within everyone's budget. Now, if you want more information, you can go to lugradio.org/live, and that will link you to both the UK if you're interested, which is in July, and I'm actually also going to try to attend that one, and then the US one, which, as I said, was April 12th and 13th. Now, as part of our sponsorship with Lug Radio Live, I'm happy to announce that I'm able to actually give away some free tickets. I know they're only $10, but it's still great to be able to give them away at no cost to a couple of people. If you head to my blog, should be later today, if not tomorrow, I'll post some details on how you can get yourself some free tickets to that event. Now, onto the news. The first story I have is Sun and open source. As I've mentioned a couple times on the podcast recently, Sun takes a lot of heat sometimes in the open source community. And I think, some would say they take too much heat. Others would actually say they don't take enough heat. And I really find the situation fascinating in general. And I think it's a good look into the complex, in-depth nature, and even sometimes antithetical nature of the open source ecosystem. Now, I don't think it's disputable that Sun has done just a ton for open source. They obviously have deep roots in open source from the very beginning, and to this day they contribute a ton of code, and really a ton of mindshare as well. Now, they have strayed off the path a bit in the past at times, and I think part of the uneasiness currently has to do with a bit of their waffling opinion when it comes to Linux specifically. Now, to me, it seems like much of this is in the past, but there are still some things I see now and again that are current, and reputations, I think, die hard. One thing that is not in the past, and is definitely the cause of some current consternation, is that Sun really likes to control projects more than some in the open source world, I think, are willing to tolerate or are even comfortable with. And you know, they've historically done this with Java, they do it with OpenOffice.org at sometimes, and they certainly, in some people's opinions, do it with OpenSolaris. Roy Fielding, who is one of the original creators of Apache, recently stepped down from the OpenSolaris project due to this, and I think he brings up some valid concerns. And if you head over to the OpenSolaris mailing list, you can search for his post. If you search for his name, it should come up. Now, as Roy mentioned in his email, companies like MySQL were able to adopt products that truly are open source, but have a decision-making structure that really is mostly controlled within the company. And you'll notice that not too many people give MySQL heat because of this, because they're quite upfront and transparent about it, and that's not always the case with Sun. Now, my next point, as you probably may have guessed, is that with the recent MySQL AB acquisition by Sun, they have the opportunity potentially to study and learn from the culture that MySQL was able to create. And while I still do have some concerns about that particular acquisition, the more I think about the deal, the more I think it really made a ton of sense for Sun. Now, while on the topic of Sun and open source, it would be hard not to mention the dust kicked up recently by a post over on the Linux Foundation blog. I do have some commentary on that, but I'm going to save it for a future podcast. I will say now that, like I said, I do have some concerns that some around this fact that Sun might be tempted to push MySQL on Solaris, say. But I definitely don't think Linux support of MySQL is going to suffer anytime soon, so I don't know that should be a valid concern for people. And if you're looking for a little bit of background information on the whole Linux and OpenSolaris kind of goings back and forth, if you head over to the RedMonk blog, they have a really good post kind of giving you a quick Q&A that will bring you up to date on that issue. The next story I have is Microsoft makes strategic changes in technology and business practices to expand interoperability. And as you probably guessed, that is the title of their press release, not something that I came up with. And by now, you've probably heard about that Microsoft press release. It happened a little while ago regarding their quote-unquote new interoperability principles and actions. And here's a quick quote from that press release. Quote, Microsoft Corp. today announced a set of broad-reaching changes to its technology and business practices to increase the openness of its products and drive greater interoperability, opportunity, and choice for developers, partners, customers, and competitors. Specifically, Microsoft is implementing four new interoperability principles and corresponding actions across its high-volume business products. 1. Ensuring open connections. 2. Promoting data portability. 3. Enhancing support for industry standards. And 4. Fostering more open engagement with customers and the industry, including open source communities. These steps represent an important step and significant change in how we share information about our products and technologies, said Microsoft Chief Executive Steve Ballmer. For the past 33 years, we have shared a lot of information with hundreds of thousands of partners around the world and helped build the industry, but today's announcement represents a significant expansion towards even greater transparency. Our goal is to promote greater interoperability, opportunity, and choice for customers and developers throughout the industry by making our products more open and by sharing even more information about our technologies. End quote. Now, as you probably guessed, the web was just abuzz with activity shortly after this announcement pertaining to the announcement. Now, first, let's just start with the basics here. The products covered in the announcement are Windows Vista, including the .NET framework, Windows Server 2008, SQL Server 2008, Office 2007, Exchange 2007, and Office SharePoint 2007. And that does include future versions of all these products, but not previous versions. The key promises that they're including here are, quote, ensuring open connections to Microsoft's high-volume products, documenting how Microsoft supports industry standards and extensions, enhancing Office 2007 to produce greater flexibility in document formats, launching the Open Source Interoperability Initiative, and expanding industry outreach and dialogue, end quote. And while I see the word open source being used quite a bit in conjunction with this release, sometimes in the release and most of the time just people pointing to it, I have to admit I see very little reason why. This is about API and protocol access and open APIs and standards, and this will certainly help open source developers, but it isn't Microsoft actually opening any code or, from what I can tell, even changing their stance on open source. Let me say that this could be the beginning of a fairly major shift for Microsoft, and a change I think that most people feel is long overdue. As usual with these kinds of announcements, though, the devil really is in the details, and the question really is this announcement fluff, or is it substance with, you know, demonstrable change coming? Now, the first major hole I saw, and I didn't read a ton into it, I did do quite a bit of research, but didn't have the time to in-depth study some of the links. Their covenant not to sue open source developers, along with some of the other pieces, only pertain to non-commercial distribution and implementation. And this makes room, really, for a lot of gray area, and that's around how you define commercial use, what is commercial use, and I think there's going to be a lot of questions there. Also, from what I can tell, the patent provision terms discussed in the announcement are not compatible with most open source licenses, and that definitely does include the GPL. Now, that being said, it's a far cry from Microsoft calling Linux a cancer, which wasn't that long ago, so it's certainly a step in the right direction, if nothing else. To be honest here, though, the real driver is definitely customer demand and a landscape that's shifting underneath the feet of Microsoft. This isn't something that Microsoft is doing for no reason or to benefit itself. I think they're finally coming around to the fact that things really are starting to change. And I think the 451 group put that well, and this is from their blog. Quote, nudged by the European Union's Court of First Instance, but more likely the result of a hard look at market dynamics and the competition, Microsoft has opened up its APIs and pledged to work more openly with the rest of the industry, including the open source community, on interoperability and standards issues. It's an acknowledgement that in today's world, many more flowers bloom when platform companies make their APIs completely open for developers to write to, a la Google, and Microsoft's recent investee, Facebook. This is yet another thing Google has taught the largest software company in the world. It appears on the face of it that Microsoft now intends to live by the merit of its products rather than rely on lock-in. As a result, developers should gain the potential to tie applications more closely into Microsoft's Windows, SQL Server, Office, and Exchange Server products with greater flexibility and innovation, perhaps through self-sustaining developer communities. SharePoint could also benefit from a platform approach, becoming a de facto central application for large segments of the market. And Microsoft is aiming to make open source applications run as well on Windows as they do on Linux, enabling it to continue competing against Linux while at the same time accepting and working to support open source projects. End quote. Now I think in reality, as it stands right now, whether this is a major announcement or just marketing fluff will not become apparent for at least the coming months, and it could take, you know, a year if not years. And as the real news comes forth, I'll certainly be following it, and I will post updates. In the meantime, if you go to my blog, I've posted a bunch of links from Mary Jo Foley and a response from Red Hat and Grok Law, Bill Hilf, Andy Updegrove, a bunch of links if you're interested about this story you can get to from my blog. Now, one final note here. I think one thing is just absolutely clear to me, and that's if this is to be the beginning of real change for Microsoft, Ballmer has to go. And I've said that before, and I stand by it. It will not be possible for them to really, really change with him in charge. And if you don't think so, during all the talk of openness from Microsoft during this press announcement, I'll end the story with his words during the press conference. First is Brad Smith, who is the general counsel for Microsoft. Brad Smith, With respect to other commercial distributors and users, the clear message is that patent licenses will be freely available. Steve Ballmer, patents will be, not freely, will be available. Brad Smith, readily available. Steve Ballmer, readily available for the right fee. As you can see, some things just don't change. The last story I have is Skoll plans rebound thanks to $100 million Lifeline. And just as you think you're not going to hear another Skoll story, something else happens. And I have no idea how, but it looks like Skoll managed to get about a $100 million bid that will take the company private. And you should keep in mind, not all of this went as cash right away. It was kind of a small amount of cash up front and then an extended open credit line from there. And here's a quote from the article, which was on internetnews.com. Quote, embattled Unix vendor Skoll may get a new lease on life thanks to a $100 million infusion aimed at helping it emerge from bankruptcy and pursue its controversial legal claims. The financing comes from Stephen Norris Capital Partners, which will take a controlling interest in Skoll as part of the deal. Not only will the deal position us to emerge from Chapter 11, but it also marks an exciting future for our business, said Jeff Hunsaker, the company's president and COO, in a statement. This significant financial backing is positive news for Skoll's customers, partners, and resellers who continue to request upgrades and rely upon Skoll's Unix services to drive their business forward, he said. According to a statement from the company, SNCP already had a business plan for Skoll that includes pursuing its legal claims. End quote. Now, unless the Norris in that SNCP is Chuck Norris, I can't see how in the long term this is going to help them at all. Skoll has a dying operating system on its hands, along with two lawsuits that are going absolutely nowhere. And I've not seen too much recently about mobile offering either. So the previous bid of $36 million by York seemed high. Even if it's just a credit line for part of it, $100 million to sink into Skoll seems absolutely ludicrous to me. It seems as if, as part of this deal, Daryl McBride will leave as CEO, but I've not seen any confirmation on that. I think there is one possible silver lining here, though. If Novell does win its case against Skoll, now there may actually be some assets for them to take, which almost certainly wouldn't have been the case before. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.